Chapter 9. Battle Magic. Stavius reflexively raised his arm, thrust his hand and palm forward with his fingers spread wide, and a small, glowing blue disc appeared. The spear turned to dust as it drove into this small shield. Stavius looked down and saw a small pile of white sand at his feet.
"Nice reaction, Stavius. Now let's see how you handle fire," taunted Janus as he flung a giant orange and yellow ball of fire at Stavius.
"Hey!" yelled Stavius as he defensively raised both arms in front of his face and ducked. A blue sphere of energy formed around him, but he wasn't quite quick enough this time, and his left forearm was singed.
"Ouch! That hurt, you little prick!" he yelled as he threw a brilliant red fireball of his own at Janus.
Janus flicked it away with a wave of his hand and said, "Ooh, so you decided to come out and play, Stavius. Do you think you can handle it?" Janus then threw three small fireballs at Stavius in rapid succession. Seeing Janus's dismissal of his attack with a wave of his hand gave Stavius an idea. He blocked Janus's fireballs with a left and a right and another left forearm block. It was like doing martial arts with magic wrist guards. The fireballs bounced off his blocks into the darkness, and Stavius looked at his arms. His hands and arms were surrounded by a golden glow, and he could feel the magic energy coursing through his body.
"You're going to lose if you stop to admire the pretty colors," laughed Janus as he blasted a lightning bolt at Stavius.
Stavius extended his left arm straight in front of his body and dropped his right behind. He caught the lightning bolt and felt its energy surge over his body, down his right arm and into the ground behind him. He didn't know how he knew to do this, but then remembered the long nights of fantasy games he played with Malik, Tyler, and Ethan. They would role-play their enchanted battles, and these were some of the moves they invented. Janus finally stopped his attack, and an idea formed in Stavius's mind while they both stood there panting. He remembered how Ethan and Tyler had been deadlocked between two perfectly matched warlocks when Ethan tried something different. Tyler claimed it didn't work, and they argued for an hour, but it was worth a try. Stavius wound up and blasted a power bolt towards Janus, who raised a block. The bolt didn't hit Janus, though. Instead, it exploded the earth at his feet, which threw the boy a good 10 feet in the air. Stavius immediately smashed him with a fireball thrown with all his might before Janus could react, and Janus was knocked through the air for half the length of a football field. A crowd had gathered and was talking in hushed tones as Stavius struggled to catch his breath. He ignored them and began running toward Janus as he realized that his friend wasn't moving and might be seriously hurt. Stavius had almost reached him when he heard Janus yell,
"Yeah, baby! What a rush!"
Stavius slowed to a jog and reached down to help Janus up. "Are you all right, man?" he asked as he pulled his friend to his feet.
"All right! That was awesome, dude! I knew you had it in you!"
Janus laughed. He noticed Stavius's burnt forearm and said, "Let me help you with that." Janus passed his hand over Stavius's arm, and the ugliest scab Stavius had ever seen appeared. "Don't worry, that will start itching like crazy tomorrow, but your skin will be healed as soon as you pull it off." He was grinning, but his expression turned serious as he said, "Dude, you are in so much trouble. Look at what you did to Boris Precious' practice field." Stavius turned around and saw the ordinarily immaculate tournament field grass scarred with burnt streaks and a large 10-foot diameter, half-foot deep crater at midfield. He said, "Hey, some of it's your fault."
"Yeah, but I don't have to take combat lessons from the man," chuckled Janus. "He's going to kill you."
Bor ran onto the field at that very moment and yelled, "What in the name of Mars is going on here?" And they both doubled over with laughter. Everyone had rushed over to watch once the fireworks began, and no one could believe that Stavius was involved.
"Let me ask again," bellowed Bor. "What in the name of Mars is going on here?"
"Sorry about your field, Bor," said Stavius. "Janus was just teaching me some, he wasn't sure what to call it."
"I was teaching him how to do battle magic," explained Janus.
"It's called manipulation," interjected Ms. Burkell.
"No, it's called battle magic," insisted Janus.
"Can you do manipulation?" Bor asked Ms. Burkell.
"Well, no, and I've never heard of anyone doing it before," admitted Ms. Burkell. "But it has been discussed as theoretically possible by the most advanced wizards of our time."
"Then I say that the people who can do it are the people who can name it," growled Bor, and Ms. Burkell backed off.
"Tell me what happened," he continued. "Stavius couldn't create an illusion when he left the dinner table, and now there's all this."
Bor was now looking at his damaged field.
"Stavius still can't cast an illusion," said Janus. "He cannot control magic like the rest of us. However, he can tap directly into the energy emanating from Earth and direct it in whatever manner he wants.
It took me years of practice to do this, but he's a natural. We just had to draw it out of him.
And how did you do that? Asked Mrs. Burkell. I've been working with him for weeks with no success.
I tried the Cran method and sucker-punched him, grinned Janice. It seemed to bring out his fighting skills, and I figured, why not? He's about to head out and be killed anyway. There was nothing to lose.
You know, you really are a jerk, said Stavius. But thank you anyway.
No problem, man, laughed Janice. That was the most fun I've ever had. It was awesome! Woohoo!
Here's the deal, guys, says Stavius. I'm heading out to rescue the other heroes tomorrow morning, and Janice is coming with me.
Janice looked startled, but Ertish interrupted before you could say anything. Janice can't go because he's the key. He's not a hero.
The key is useless unless we acquire the talismans, argued Stavius. We all know I can't do that alone, but maybe it's possible with Janice's help. Besides, did you see us fighting out there? This guy has the word hero written all over him.
There were several muted cheers from the trainers, and Bor cut Ertish off before he could complain.
I agree. Janice is definitely a hero. And one more thing. I'm coming with you. You're going to need all the help you can get.
No, you're not, came an unfamiliar voice from the darkness. The centaur stepped into the light and continued. I'll carry these two to Septumculus, but there's no way anyone your size is ever getting on my back.
Bor looked disappointed, so Stavius quickly added, Don't worry, man. We'll go bring the heroes back. And if we don't get the talismans this time, we'll save some fighting for you for the next attempt.
Ertesh then clapped his hands and said, Okay, everybody, we have some serious packing to do. These boys need to leave at first light if they hope to make it out of the mountains before nightfall.
Stavius and Janice had been sent to bed to rest before their journey, but the rest of the village had pulled an all-nighter to pack for them. The boys were awakened at 4:30 and arrived at the town square at 5, ready for breakfast and departure. The large cart the villagers had used to carry the centaur was now fully loaded and ready to be hitched up. The boys were amazed at how much they were bringing and asked whether there was enough left to get the village through the coming winter. The centaur was not as amused. He took one look at the supply wagon, grabbed 2 bushels of apples off the top and said, I'm not pulling any wagon. Oh, and don't forget that magical essence decays out there. You don't want any embarrassing moments when your illusions fade and your clothes revert to leaves. He instructed the boys to only pack what they could carry themselves. That would limit their total weight to what he could handle. Then he left. The trainers were thrown into confusion and began arguing about what was essential. Finally, Stavius and Janice took charge and started getting rid of gear. Removing the dragon's skin armor, heavy helmets, and the armory of weapons reduced the load by half. Their mission was going to depend on stealth more than strength. Trying to get all this gear through checkpoints would only raise suspicions.
Stavius stared longingly at his sword.
It, his former house, and some funding were the only gifts his family had provided him before sending him out on his own. His sword was now the sole possession he still had from before the Soul Reapers had grabbed him. He set it down, though, because it was probably nothing more than a stick under a plethora of his mother's powerful magical enhancements. Bor saw his sadness and said, Take the sword. The enchantments will return when you get to Septumculus, but take these 2 knives for the trip. They're real, although they won't be quite as pretty or sharp on the road. He handed them 2 6-inch bowie knives in sheaths. They were simple, practical tools more than weapons, but they meant the boys wouldn't be entirely unarmed as they headed out on a dangerous mission. They were thanking Bor when Ms. Burkell approached them. I know you boys don't think very much of me, she began, but I am a very learned and powerful magician. She quickly handed Janice and Stavius 2 highly polished stones about the size of their fists before they could say anything stupid. Take these with you. These rocks are dragon stones, and you can think of them as being like magic batteries. They don't hold a lot of magical power, but if you hold them close enough, the energy will slowly transfer to you. It's not much, but it might keep you alive in a crisis. She quickly walked away as the boys crammed the stones into their pockets.
Well, now I feel bad about being such a jerk to her, whispered Janice.
Really? Asked Davius. Nah, she's a hack, Janice laughed.
Thanks, Bor and Ms. Burkell, but no more gifts, please. Remember, we're trying to lighten our load, not add to it, shouted Stavius.
Well, I hope I can change your minds on that one, said Mayra, as she walked up to them with 2 large bundles. Here are 2 sets of tunics, underwear, pants, blankets, and towels sewn from real cotton cloth. I used some magic to manufacture them, but the material is all real so that they won't fall off down the road.
Thank you, Mayra. That's very thoughtful, said Stavius, as she stretched up to kiss him. He turned his illusion vision to full strength and gave her a quick peck on the cheek.
Stavius told the villagers to dump the wardrobes which had been assembled for them and to get rid of anything unnecessary while they went to change clothes. Janus specifically instructed them to discard the tents, sleeping bags, cooking equipment, chairs, and a table that had been packed. "We're going on a fast-paced journey in late summer," explained Janus. "This isn't a family vacation. We'll sleep under the stars and eat our food raw. All we'll need are these blankets and towels." The boys changed into Myra's new clothes and returned to a dramatically reduced pile of supplies a few minutes later. It was still far more than they could carry, though. The problem was that they needed to bring enough food and water for a week. They were at an impasse until Janus had an idea. He ordered the trainers to reduce the food and water down to the absolute minimum quantity and to organize it by meal. It was nearly 6 o'clock by the time they had packaged each meal into labeled bags and arranged them next to a pair of backpacks. The result was a tenth of what had been on the wagon, but still 6 times what the rucksacks could hold. Janus walked over to the supplies, spread his arms as though he was going to try and pick everything up at once, and began to hum. The air between his arms started to shimmer like the heat rising off a street on a hot summer day, and the packaged meals began to shrink. Within 3 minutes, he had shrunk them to a point where they could all comfortably fit inside the backpacks. Ms. Burkell's mouth was agape. She gasped, "I've never seen anyone scale so much so quickly. You two are amazing." Janus didn't offer any of his typical comebacks, though, and Stavius could tell that the strain of his effort had exhausted him. "Are you going to be all right, dude?" he asked as he and Janus packed supplies into the packs. "Yeah, I'll be back to my exceptional self in a few minutes," Janus replied. "Scaling things takes a lot more effort than restoring them to their original size. Don't worry, it'll be easy to grab a meal, restore it, and eat it on the road." They dropped their dragonstones into the packs to maintain the magic, tied them shut, tied their rolled blankets and towels outside, and threw their backpacks over their shoulders. Their bags were heavy, but manageable. Stavius stood, clasped his sword belt around his waist, and wondered whether it would survive the journey. Then the boys took one final look at the place which had been their home and began walking out of the village, surrounded by all their friends. The centaur met them by the bridge and approved of their gear. "See what a little prioritization can do," he laughed with what sounded like a slight whinny. Everyone seemed to be in a good mood as the sky brightened, and Stavius thought this would be an excellent time to get to know the centaur. It was the most massive centaur Stavius had ever seen. Stavius was 6 feet tall, but his head didn't even reach the centaur's withers, and the creature's torso was gigantic as well. It had dark skin and a heavily muscled chest and arms, which were densely covered with curly black hair. The centaur's manly face sported a full beard topped by long dreadlocks. Stavius casually asked, "Hey, why do we never see any female centaurs?" The centaur stopped dead in his tracks and said, "What do you think I am?" Stammered Stavius as he stared up at the giant man growing out of a horse's body with an angry expression on his face. "You need to look below the withers, human, not above them," the centaur growled. Stavius stepped back and nervously glanced between the centaur's legs. "Holy Venus, you have an udder!" he exclaimed. "You're a girl, and you're a cow!" The centaur erupted in laughter and said, "Of course I'm partially cow. What did you think this strong, sexy body was? A horse?" "Well, yes," stammered Stavius, who was still in shock. "This is going to be a long trip," groaned the centaur. "The name's Bernice, by the way. Let's get going." The crowd crossed the bridge and began walking up the road leading out of the valley. Stavius thought of Mr. Ortish as he passed the cave entrance and remembered that Mark had something important to say to him. "Hold on, guys, I need to say a quick goodbye to Mr. Ortish," yelled Stavius as he trotted over to speak with his teacher. "Mr. Ortish, before I go, would you please tell me your host's name?" asked Stavius when he approached the man. "It's Ernest, Mr. Stavius," replied Ortish. "Why do you ask such a question on the cusp of this great journey?" "Because I wanted to be sure I was right," answered Stavius. "You're Mr. Narwani, my history teacher back on Earth." "Very impressive, Mr. Panagopoulos," admired Ortish. "There aren't many young men named Marius in the 8th grade, but how did you deduce my identity?" "Because you yelled at me for being late to your class just like you did here," Stavius excitedly replied. "I thought it was you and guessed your host name must start with an Ur after I found out your first name on Earth is Satish. You see, I remember everything but mirth when I wake up." The blood drained from Artish's face as he grabbed Stavius's arm and dragged him towards the cave. The other villagers looked on in confusion, but Ertish waved them off, saying that he had something critical to discuss with Stavius before they left.
"What about the importance of punctuality?" shouted Janus,
but Ertish ignored him and continued rushing towards the cave. Once inside, Ertish motioned Stavius to follow him to a massive wooden door set into one of the stone walls. Stavius saw the ghost image of a rock wall illusion hiding it as Ertish fumbled with some old keys to unclasp the lock. No one else probably even knew of this room's existence. They went inside, and Ertish carefully locked it behind them.
"We have complete privacy now. No one knows this room exists, and no one can hear anything we say or do in here. You can't tell anyone about this," said Ertish.
"I'm not sure about all this," answered Stavius, who was starting to feel a bit nervous. "I have something to show you," Ertish excitedly said as he took off his tunic. Stavius began backing away from the shirtless man. Ertish saw him and said, "Oh, come here. This is all your fault. Your ability to see through illusions makes us all wear these clothes, and it gets unbearably stuffy in this room since there isn't any ventilation. Come over here and take a look at these documents." Stavius edged towards the table to look at the paper strewn across it while keeping himself as far from Ertish as possible. Ertish ignored him and began explaining his work. "Heroes have used this valley as a training ground to fulfill our prophecy for hundreds of years, but this isn't where it all started," he began. "I believe that attempts were being made in England 1,000 years ago, and that it might have been going on for far longer than that."
"The problem is that I've reached a dead end, and you are the only one who can help."
Stavius looked at his pleading eyes, but had no idea what he meant nor what he wanted. Ertish then quickly explained that he had found some ancient artifacts and writings from England in the oldest boxes of files.
He suspected that the English had been trying to fulfill the prophecy 1,000 years back, and that somehow the Soul Reapers had brought some of their tools to this cave when the attempts began here.
"I think the people from Earth have been visiting here for thousands of years, and that our worlds are more intertwined than any of us realize," he explained. "We might have a better chance at fulfilling the prophecy if I could learn more about how our two worlds are connected. But I have almost no data here, and I have no way to ask Satish to search for it on Earth. I need you to convince a man solely interested in American history to research ancient history from around the world. He needs to search for anything which relates to visits to this world so that I can use what he learns here. But I can't influence him," he concluded. Stavius just stared at him in disbelief.
"I'm serious," Ertish pleaded. "I believe that there is a strong linkage between our two worlds, but here I only have access to a limited local history for a few hundred years. And over there, I have access to a wealth of global events, but I'm only interested in American history. I need someone to get me to do the research over there that I need in my mind over here."
That sounds impossible," muttered Stavius. "Mr. Nawani would think I'm insane to ask, and besides, I don't even think he likes me."
"You're right, I don't," admitted Ertish. "Satish thinks you're a typical kid who doesn't value what can be learned from history, although you surprised me when you knew about George Santayana. Of course, now I know why," he laughed.
"Okay, so what do I do?" asked Stavius.
"From what I can tell, heroes were trying to fulfill the prophecy about 1,000 years ago in England, and then there was nothing until a few hundred years back.
I don't know why there was a break or why the attempts moved. I need to know if anything similar has happened on Earth. My gut tells me
that there has to be some connection. Try finding anything you can about legends, seven talismans, magic, quests, and whatever else you can imagine, and get your history teacher involved. Maybe between you, him, and me, we can piece something together and figure out what is going on," said Ertish.
Okay, but I have no idea how to do that," admitted Stavius. "I've never been good at history, and I've never been interested in it. Now you have me interested in ancient history, but I'm stuck in your American history class."
"I don't know what to tell you, Stavius. You should also know that Satish has no interest in legends or metaphysics, only verifiable facts. But I'm sure you'll figure something out," smiled Ertish. "But be very careful with whom you share these secrets. I think that there are visitors on Earth."
"Yeah, the ones trying to reduce my magical abilities here by confusing Mark with the new STEAM curriculum, right?" asked Stavius.
"Wait, you figured that out?" marveled Ertish.
"Yeah, my friends and I are starting a math and science club to keep my skills up," said Stavius. "We've called ourselves Team Stavius, Earth Division, and we're trying to get Janus to join us as well."
"Wait!
You've told your friends about Mirth, and you know who Janice is too? Yelled Ertish. You have to be careful and change the name of your club.
Hey, I know, we're all scared, especially after what happened to the last group of heroes, said Stavius.
What about the last group? Asked Ertish. He was becoming more and more impressed with this young man.
Oh yeah, I forgot to tell you, said Stavius. We found them. They all went into comas in their sleep on the same night in June 6 years ago, and none have ever come out.
Ertish slumped into a chair, looking as though he had been physically beaten.
I cannot stress this enough. You have to be very careful, Stavius. Your club cannot be a school function, or else you and your friends will be suspected. But perhaps I can help.
Satish and his wife both disagree with this new curriculum approach to the point where his wife quit teaching because of it. Figure out a way to ask him for a math tutor. He'll recommend his wife, and perhaps she could assist your club. She goes by her maiden name, Mrs. Data, and she used to teach calculus until she took early retirement this year. Be careful, young man, both here and on Earth. You might be the best chance we've ever had to save our world. The older man stood, put his tunic back on, and opened the door. The two began walking back towards Janice and Bernice, who were both impatient to get started on the journey.
And remember, Stavius, not a word of this to anyone over here, warned Tish as they approached the others.